Hello, Stargazers. Welcome to 7th House Astrology, where I take any topic that's astrological or any topic that's related to relationships and romance. I investigate it under the lens of Synastry Astrology, otherwise known as Love or Relationship Astrology. I'm your host, Sandra Misek, and I'm so glad that you guys have joined me for today. So for today, we're going to be continuing on with part two of Hermione Granger and Draco Malfoy's Synastry chart. And I think that it's going to be quite interesting. Kind of like what I mentioned in the last episode, I'm actually tempted to do another episode comparing Harry Potter's chart to Draco Malfoy's chart with the themes that I'm seeing with Hermione in this point in time. But before I go too much astray, let's go ahead and jump right in. So first impressions that I'm kind of seeing when it comes to this relationship between both Hermione and Draco. The first thing is, I think that really, just looking at their chart in general, their sun signs, the Draco's sun being in Gemini, Hermione's moon, as well as her sun sign being in Virgo. I see that as a point of contention, along with Hermione's moon being opposite Draco's moon. There's a lot of two people who are hanging on to their own belief systems and not really leaving some room or benefit of the doubt when it comes to their belief systems. So like, for example, with Hermione being that double Virgo, she's big about, you know, reforming the good within the magical working realm. And anyone who is like Draco is considered to be bad. So there's like a black and white viewpoint within her where it's good or bad. If you're bad, you're the scum of the earth and you don't even deserve attention. Draco, on the other hand, his viewpoint that he keeps holding on to, as we know from the Harry Potter books as well as the movies, is purebloods are not really great wizards, or not purebloods, sorry, the muggleborns are not great wizards, so therefore they should not be in the wizarding realm, leaving room only for purebloods, those who were born from wizards and therefore born into the wizarding realm in that way. And, you know, again, he's holding on to a lot of baggage with prejudice. I kind of see that with both persons stubbornly clinging on to their own, you know, ideologies is kind of leaving a lot of blindsidedness when it comes to a potential friendship. And, you know, there's lots of potential. I think that, like I mentioned the last episode, Draco does have a lot of potential. When it comes to having a heart, you know, with his Piscean moon, basically he does have a huge heart. He has a soft spot. You know, with Hermione, she's not all perfect either. She does have a blind spot. And I feel like if both could open up and give each other a chance, that's where I think there could be a potential for making room for a relationship or making room for a friendship. But I think both persons would have to sacrifice considerably, like turning their worldviews around and giving the other person a chance in that relationship is what I mainly see within the chart. But beginning with what struck me about both Draco and Hermione is that Draco's son, his Mercury and Venus positions being in the 10th house, I think it was Venus was in Gemini. Mercury is actually in early Cancer, but still is in his 10th house in that sector. And then we have his Sun also in Gemini. That's actually squared directly with Hermione's Sun, her Saturn position. And I think we might as well should just go ahead and say with her Moon as well. But when it comes down to two sun signs that are squared, it's not that it's impossible for the two to get along. It's just they're very, you know, actually with Geminians and Virgos, they're both ruled by Mercury. So they have that in common. So they have the seeking out of knowledge, seeking out of facts, and the ever very quick mercurial quicksilver mind that Mercury really provides, the ruler Mercury provides. But I kind of liken it this way. So I'm going to say, let's pretend that Virgo and Gemini are in a science class. You know, and just to reiterate how the two signs learn. And I'm just going to say right here that the differences between their learning styles. So let's say that in science class, the teacher decided that we're going to display, or we're going to, you know, see how combustibles work, you know, all at your lab stations. And Gemini, so Virgo comes into class. Virgo really hates combustibles because it's not an experiment that can be controlled. And B, let's just face it, it's dangerous. It's big time dangerous. Gemini, on the other hand, is like, wow, this is, you know, things that blow up. Wow, this is new. This is great. I'm going to have fun today. Furthermore, in the science class, while Virgo is doing her best to actually control the experiment as much as possible so that, you know, an explosion just doesn't happen and cause, you know, vast amounts of chaos, you know, it'll happen. But again, in her own controlled way, and while she's trying to control that, here's Gemini mixing the two solutions together and having a massive explosion. And of course, may I say this too, in the back of the science class, in the back of the laboratory, Gemini's, you know, having loads of fun, laughing, almost rolling on the floor. Well, Virgo takes a pause to basically look back at Gemini and glare at Gemini while he is just rolling on the floor, just laughing with his friends. And his friends are probably really applauding him on because he's the one, or he's applauding his friends on because they're the ones who caused the explosion, or all of the above. They're all applauding each other because they all caused the explosion. Either way, Gemini, whereas Virgo would give the dirty look, Gemini would see the experiment as, this is fun. You know, this was unpredictable, spontaneous, and it's just, it's new. It's not a boring class lecture. It's not a boring tome of, you know, what happens when we mix combustibles. This is like a real life application of what happens to combustibles and what, you know, kind of providing an explosion. And they're all for it. Furthermore, at the end of science class, Virgo might be more inclined to saying to her closest friends, well, I bet Gemini didn't learn very much because he was having a little too much fun. Au contraire, Virgo. Au contraire. Au contraire, mon ami. Gemini, while having fun, also learned the real world application to the science experiment and how to apply it. You know, with Geminians, their whole aim when it comes to applying knowledge and applying insight into knowledge is how to apply it to the real world, as opposed to where Virgo, it's let's follow everything step by step. Everything has to be really well organized. Everything has to be followed for a good reason. I mention this example because I feel that this is Draco and Hermione's relationship right here, and it kind of makes me smile. Draco is always in the back of potions class, and, you know, while he's, you know, mixing the potion, he's the one who's usually dumping the potion on, you know, Leia's classmate to see how exactly it works. So instead of reading the book and, you know, taking the book at face value, so like say somebody's going to grow big old ears, you know, when it comes, like the book states, you know, with this potion, you better be careful, spilling it on somebody can make them grow bigger or something like that, or big old ears. Well, with Draco, he would want to, you know, it's like, so the book states this, let me actually see how this actually works, or let me see how this actually applies in the reality. So that's where he would dump it on a colleague and see the colleague see the ears expand. Meanwhile, Hermione, of course, is in the front of the class, looking behind her when the commotion hits with the, you know, the classmate, and kind of glaring at Draco, like, really, you're interfering with my learning. And meanwhile, her potion is, she's still concocting the potion because she's following the book step by step. And she's making sure it doesn't, a drop does not touch her, or does not touch any of her colleagues, not even her desk, because she believes the book knowledge of it, of this is what will happen. And I kind of see where, again, you know, with Hermione, she could hold that viewpoint of, you know, Gemini, like Draco, he's pouring his potion all over everybody. He just doesn't get it. Why is he even at Hogwarts? He's so stupid. And, you know, he just doesn't take things seriously. I'm surprised he won't be expelled. And meanwhile, Draco, you know, Geminians also hold Virgos in view of, yeah, Hermione's just a stuck-up little princess, or, you know, usually, like, with Geminians, with Virgos, it's usually, like, they're stuck up, I don't want to deal with them, I don't want to interact with them. So that's where I feel like there's some held prejudice here. And I feel with Draco, too, he'd probably look at Hermione and think, oh, you know, not only is she Muggle-born, she's stuck up, so therefore, two reasons why I should not hang out with her. And again, all wrapped around perceived notions and really just judging two different people who learn differently. I think if Hermione were to open up to the fact that maybe Draco, you know, maybe he does learn by real world example, and maybe that, or maybe kind of recommend a safer real world example to test potions would probably be a good gateway to repairing the enemy ship or the broken friendship, if you may, within the Harry Potter series. And also with Draco, I really feel that instead of looking at Hermione, not only her birth, but also looking at her as, oh, well, she's just stuck up. Maybe, you know, also taking a look at, well, she does need the structure. And, you know, not only kind of recognizing she does need structure, but maybe also saying, hey, you know what? You know the structure like the back of your hand, you know, and Virgos are like this too, where it's like, you know the structure like the back of your hand, you know the process like the back of your hand, try doing it on your own. And, you know, and maybe like along with saying not only try doing it on your own, but maybe even having Draco say to Hermione, it's like, you know what, I believe that you can do this on your own. I believe you're smart enough to control this potion. And I believe that you could do your own potion. You don't have to just follow the book, or you can, you don't have to just follow the steps. You can kind of, you know, see what happens when you kind of go at your own. It's like, you don't have to dump it on a colleague, but you can just kind of go it on your own, see what happens. And it's like, either way, there, it's not the end of the world. If you make a mistake, I'm still here for you. I mean, I think if, you know, I think the one reason why I picked Hermione and Draco is that this kind of just goes to show that even though you have colleagues, or you might have someone in your life who is of a squared influence or has a lot of things that are dissimilar in your charts, it doesn't mean that it's game over in relationships. You know, there are ways to make the relationship work. Yes, especially for Hermione and Draco, and with Geminians and Virgos, there's a lot of, you know, negotiation, far more than if, you know, both persons were to seek the compatible signs to their sun signs, but there are ways to work around those differences. And I think that's where we kind of struggle the most. Not only does Hermione and Draco struggle the most within Harry Potter, but I feel that we, you know, J.K. Rowling was very brilliant as to represent, you know, or really kind of paint Draco and Hermione as, you know, the common pitfalls that we as human beings kind of fall into. We see differences and we, you know, kind of burn the bridges and shut those and slam the doors, when really there could be a lot of potential with that person that you dislike, or there could be a lot of differences, or there could be a lot of different areas of room where both persons could really relate as well. So I just thought that that was, you know, kind of a the overall message really with both charts, but I'm going to continue on with both Draco's and as well as Hermione's moon. Okay. So outside Hermione's moon position, is Jupiter. And when it comes, so Draco's Jupiter is outside of Hermione's moon position being in Virgo. And of course, Hermione has a close conjunct with Jupiter as well with her moon's position. What I see is that here is where, with Draco, you know, usually Jupiter outside of a personal planet indicates how we can kind of get along or how we can kind of forsake our own viewpoints and forsake ourselves for the other person. And I, you know, I kind of see where Draco has a huge heart here, where, you know, he has that potential to be really tender and to be really gentle with Hermione. It's just, again, the way his choice in life, I think, is just really misdirected, especially with that 10th house being ruled to, you know, appease his father. And, you know, also with his family dynamic at home, it's really messed up. It's not really a great dynamic that's working for him. But, you know, if he were to choose differently and to choose, not, you know, to still be in harmonious relationship with his family, but to not be exactly like his family's bottom slogan. You know, really, he has that potential to forsake himself and to forsake his ego and everything that makes him, you know, honorable and desirable. He could actually willingly give up a lot for Hermione. And in Hermione's case, it would be greatly appreciated. I think in Hermione's case, she could, she needs a lot of support, especially with that lunar eclipse. It's like she embodies Virgo, but she also also really has a lot of doubts and denies herself a lot, that denies to herself that she is smart and that she is capable. And here's a really beautiful relationship with, you know, the Jupiter position, Draco's Jupiter position, where, I mean, he could lose the ego and he could actually be there and support Hermione through and through, you know, and maybe kind of cause her to ease up on herself a little bit and maybe see that life is not just about perfection and getting it all right. I also think that if you drop the muggle-born notion, he could really truly be a good support for Hermione. You know, again, dropping the prejudice, he could really be a good support system for Hermione. I also advocate for this. I know that both Hermione's moon position as well as Draco's moon position are in opposition to each other. So whereas Hermione's moon position is in Virgo, he is in Pisces. Again, I see a Piscean moon as somebody who has, like, who's just a big old softy inside. And they have a really big, nice, tender heart. And I think that, you know, even though the moon opposite Jupiter kind of causes for somebody to brag and be a braggart, which is definitely Malfoy, or it's definitely Draco. I also see, again, two positions, you know, especially with the chart over Hermione's chart, two positions where he could be a really good ally and a really good friend. You know, despite the fact of being in Slytherin, he could be a really good friend and he could really, I mean, he could really sympathize with Hermione if he, like I said, if he dropped the muggle-born notion, which is, you know, his racist notions, his family's tagline. If he dropped all of that, which we kind of see the promise of that within the sixth book, The Half-Blood Prince. We kind of see the promise of that going into the Deathly Hallows, but he's still kind of struggling with it. But what I do see with both Draco and Hermione is that he could really relate to Hermione in her suffering. And vice versa, I think Hermione could really relate to Draco with his suffering. She might not have a bad family. She might have a very supportive family. You know, she's trying to keep the Granger name intact, whereas he has like kind of like a broken home situation or just an abusive family situation. So I think with her struggles in trying to be perfect and trying to be the best wizard that there could ever possibly be, and how that's inwardly hurting her and causing a lot of weak spots for her, you know, some blind sides, but also I think internally it hurts. Again, I can say from experience, it's kind of like when I was much younger, you know, throughout my teens into my 20s, I tried to hide a learning disability. And to be honest with you, it actually hurt me more to try to, and it depressed me more to try to hide it than to embrace it. Because in a way, I was hiding a part of me. And I think with Hermione, same thing. She's hiding the muggle part of her. Instead of, yeah, I'm muggle born. Yeah, I'm better than you. You know, instead of embracing the muggle born as a part of her. But I think that she could relate to Draco and really maybe encourage him to be his best self possible. And vice versa. I think Draco could really display some really great traits in understanding the pain that Hermione is going through, the struggles that Hermione is going through. And maybe, you know, again, I see this placement where they could, you know, where Draco could encourage her to just, you know, drop the act. You're perfect as you are, you know, just live it down. And I think that paired with the sun signs, I think with his Gemini and sun sign, I think he could encourage Hermione to, you know, let your hair down, have some fun. Don't, you know, you don't have to be perfect all the time. You're great as is. So I think that there is some potential in there. What I also found to be striking was that with Draco's, Venus conjunct or close conjunct, sorry, his Mercury position, is that that's all outside the eighth house. Hermione does not have, I mean, she has her Mars position. It's way far away. It's not conjunct Draco's position. But I think there is an element within this relationship that's causing Hermione to embrace change and to embrace transformation, from her usual set of norms. And having Mars right in her eighth house is also kind of, it's something that's overdue for her. It's something that she really kind of needs, or something that she's really fired up to do. I think with Draco, he could encourage, you know, especially with that Venus placement, he could really encourage and really have the right words to say to Hermione, things that could help her to transform her notions of perfection. And really to drop those notions of perfection, but also to be really rather encouraging as well. So like I said, I'm seeing 3 points, even though they're in cahoots with one another, I'm seeing a lot of 3 points where there's some possibilities within this chart. So where both persons could open up to the possibilities. One thing that was also striking to me, or I should say actually another thing that struck me, was Draco's position is actually right, his Saturn's position, sorry. Goodness, my words are failing me today. So sorry. Draco's Saturn's position is right outside Hermione's Sun close conjunct Saturn position in her chart. And what I see here is, you know, while there's a sense of loyalty, again, a sense of restriction on both persons' parts, I could see where this could cause a little bit of strain on the relationship. You know, Hermione has her views. She likes to kind of control events with her views, you know, namely how to stay within the good, how to execute magic properly, how to execute certain potions properly. And Draco, you know, this is like his Saturn's position is actually close conjunct his Mars position. So here I'm seeing a lot of restraint. You know, while this person has the great potential to be super successful, especially with Mars being so close to his ascendant, they can have the potential to be successful. I also see a lot of restraint with Draco, a lot of restraint with his willpower, and a lot of restraint. You know, I would say, especially also with Mars being in Virgo, and then to have Saturn close near, and very much near and very close, it just kind of shows how, you know, he's kind of more calculated when it comes to his aims and when it comes to his energy of moving forward, as opposed to just kind of moving forward. He'd rather see the procedures. He'd rather have two of his quote unquote friends from Slytherin act on his behalf or have others act on his behalf as opposed to taking chances. And again, this could really hinder not only him, but it could hinder the relationship with Hermione in the regard that there's a lot of control involved. And the same with Hermione, a lot of control involved, a lot of controlling impulses, a lot of just controlling situations and kind of shaping them to the norm. However, I could see a potential here in the regard that both persons, again, I think this is another position that really emphasizes kind of dropping the preconceived notions and dropping the prejudice or dropping all the old preconceived notions. And especially with Saturn, it's always something that's really old-fashioned. You know, like with Hermione, the good triumphs the bad. That's a very old-fashioned notion. Draco, you know, pure bloods need to rule the world. That's actually a very eugenicist notion, which unfortunately has been around with the old. And really, when it comes to Saturn, it's just encouraging dropping those old notions, dropping those old beliefs, and replacing them with newer beliefs. For Draco, it could help him to, instead of like relying on other people to do things for him, he can actually do some things for himself. And I think namely, especially since Saturn and Mars are in his first house, I would say that this is a position that's kind of holding him back when it comes to moving forward with his sense of self, as opposed to conforming to his family who might never be there for him. For Hermione, I think really letting go, I think with letting go for Draco, it would help him to move forward, to see his own identity as an individual, as opposed to part of the Malfoy family. With Hermione, it's a sense of, you know, since this is happening outside her 10th house, you know, dropping her preconceived notions of good and bad could help her to move forward with career notions, could help her to move forward with being a good wizard without having to meet, you know, so many high standards that she places on herself for being a good wizard. You know, I think she sets the bar, she sets it very high for herself. You know, I think to drop preconceived notions of the good and the bad and what's a good wizard as opposed to what's a bad wizard or what's good study habits as opposed to bad study habits. I think if she lowered the bar a little bit, she could maintain, you know, and have reasonable goals for her future while still meeting her goals for the future. One other factors that come to Draco and Hermione's chart is that there are planets that are actually conjunct each other. For instance, so Chiron is actually conjunct Chiron in both of their charts. With Hermione, Chiron's in her sixth house. For Draco, it's his ninth house. So what I kind of see here is that, you know, Chiron in the sixth house, I see that. Oh, I see that there's a situation where this person might feel when it comes to being of service to others that they lack something. And also with Taurus, it feels like with Hermione, she kind of lacks the pleasure seeking and the self-care that Taurus could bring to the relationship. With Draco, I feel that Chiron in his ninth house is basically he has a wounding due to, I think, with travel, and that kind of makes sense for him traveling away from his family. In a way, with Hogwarts, it's like a boarding school where he's spending time away from his family when really he could use some time to bond with his dad or bond with his mom and kind of understand them a bit better. I kind of feel, though, with the Chiron conjunct Chiron relationship, this would be a beautiful, I feel like this is a beautiful position in the chart, in the regard that both persons are kind of understanding, you know, they're both a Chiron in Taurus, and there's a sense of lacking luxury or sense of lacking self-care. I think for Hermione, it's because she's busy hitting the books and trying to maintain her goals as being a great wizard. I think for Draco, there's a sense of, you know, his duty to his family is causing him to lose sight of himself and his family, never mind, is, or his family, by the by, I should say, is really very manipulative and also very psychologically and emotionally abusive. So I would see that wound from Chiron deepening with him. I could see where both persons, again, could kind of come to, if they come to know one another a little bit better, they could come to know and understand each other's wounds a bit better. I think also with Hermione, it's fair to say, with a sense of service, she doesn't feel like she could serve yet because she still has to prove as a Muggle-born that she's a great wizard. And I think with, again, there could be a very beautiful relationship where with Hermione, she could really, you know, have some compassion for Draco in the regard that his family's just not really what's cut out to be. I mean, I think she sees Draco, it's like, hey, he has a perfect family. He's pure-blooded. He has a perfect life. What does he have to complain about? Well, then when it's kind of revealed that his father's extremely abusive and his mother's really distant and cold, and he almost has a non-existent family life, that's where she might have a little more understanding and some compassion for him. And vice versa with Draco, you know, maybe just saying, hey, you know what? I was wrong with this pure blood notion. That does not make for a wizard. I think wizards come in all shapes and sizes myself. And I think that you're really great and you need to acknowledge your successes, or you need to acknowledge that you're really great, even Muggle-born, that you're a great, awesome individual and you're a great and awesome wizard as well. I think that's where they have a potential. Where I see them within the books and within the movies is that they kind of heighten each other's wounds. She has a lot of barbs, or so Hermione has a lot of barbs towards Draco. Draco has plenty of insulting things to say to Hermione that really rips her to her core, especially when it comes to Muggle-born. You know, those comments, he doesn't really realize that while she puts up a brave front, it hurts her and it wounds her to her core and almost like, you know, tears her in half. Her barbs about Draco, you know, like being an idiot, or, you know, maybe he would be better off studying, could possibly remind him of his family and especially of his father and his father's words to him. And that could also rip him apart, even though he also puts up a brave front. So again, with these two Chiron positions, there's some potential for both persons to kind of understand each other. With both persons, they also have their Pluto positions conjunct one another. Now, while many astrologers say that, you know, Pluto conjunct Pluto usually indicates a generational influence that, you know, both persons are of the same age, I think that with Pluto conjunct Pluto, there are some warnings attached to that as well. And namely, what I see is both persons standing their ground, trying to take power and control over the other person. And, you know, with this relationship, I think that there could be some potential if both persons could transform their need for power and their need to keep a brave face with the other person into, again, understanding each other, understanding each other's worldviews, understanding where you're coming from. Even if you don't really agree with it, understanding where the hell you're coming from and why you're coming from as is. With Hermione, her Pluto position is actually outside, is actually right at her 11th house. With Draco, it's outside his second house. So with Draco, I think this solidifies that his family life is not very, you know, he doesn't feel very comfortable. He feels very alienated with his, within his family life, because his sense of comfort is being continually threatened. And I think that's also at Hogwarts as well, too. His sense of comfort is kind of threatened, or kind of, you know, he just feels very alienated a lot of the time. And he's trying to shake off those feelings of alienation. I think with Hermione, you know, with her Pluto position, it just kind of goes to show she likes to try to control situations to her advantage when it comes to things that are outside of school, and also things that are inside of school, you know, with her viewpoints. And I think, again, transitioning, letting go little bits here and there could really help her out. It could also help the relationship out, because Pluto is also trined Draco's son's position. And what that means is that with Draco and with Hermione, Hermione could provide a lot of great depth and insight into how Draco could, you know, shake the ills off of his family, you know, still love his family, but not, you know, happen to carry the wounds with him all the time, especially with his father, you know, how to distance himself from his family without, you know, estranging himself, but also, you know, how to like live with himself at the same time. Within this chart, other generational planets that are matched up are Uranus and as well as Neptune. Uranus could give a lot of, you know, the Uranus conjunct Uranus positions could give a lot of, you know, interesting feedback, a lot of interesting opinions from both persons. And again, it's just they could be amicable, and if their positions are amicably oriented and not eugenist, as with what, you know, Draco carries with him, it could be really a very dynamic and interesting, you know, like I could see both persons having a very interesting, you know, political or even having an interesting philosophical debate with each other. With Hermione, the Uranus position's outside her 12th house. For Draco, it's outside his third, or it's actually right in his third house. So for Draco, I think he likes to sporadically speak things that does not always agree with Hermione. I think really, again, he doesn't put a lot of thought into what he has to say. And for Hermione, being in the 12th house, this actually can affect her views a little bit, you know, because, again, that 12th house is a very personal house. It's like an inner house. It kind of affects her views inwardly. And, you know, while she puts up a brave face and puts up a brave front and a strong front for Draco, almost to the point of, you know, punching him in the face, and he's bullying Neville. I think by the same token, it's enough, like I said, again, his words could be enough to still hurt inside, you know, deep inside. I think with both Uranus placements, again, changing perspectives with both persons, again, can really help. And both could really have like a very interesting, like philosophical or magical wizarding world sort of debate with each other. Almost to where it would enliven their friendship. And then last but never least, Neptune is conjunct Neptune in this chart, which usually for me, I warn against, you know, heavy idealisms, just seeing what you want to see. I see this with Draco, where again, this being in his, looks like his fourth house, And Hermione's first house, it looks like with his fourth house, again, the ideals would be what, again, is his family's ideals, I think, is what's kind of killing him, what's kind of blinding him at this point. And for Hermione, the feeling that her sense of self is kind of watered down due to defining herself academically, defining herself as a wizard, but not really defining herself as herself. I think that, again, you know, I always warn against complete idealism with Neptune conjunct Neptune and seeing only what you want to see. Going past that and actually seeing against or kind of looking more towards the physical realm as opposed to the idyllic realm, both persons could see a lot of potential within each other and actually could ground, you know, could see like with Draco, see like how the pure-blooded notion is very eugenicist. It's very hateful. It's also full of bunk because he has a colleague who's better than he is, and he is pure-blooded. With Hermione against the good and bad, I mean, here she is. She has a colleague who seems to be of the bad, but he has a lot of complexity in him. And maybe there's a lot of, more at stake than what meets the eye with the quote-unquote bad. So I would just say to sum up with this, with the chart, the two charts, really there's a lot of negotiations and compromises having to be made with viewpoints. I think what's blinding each other, each character, are their viewpoints towards each other, and really dropping that could really yield a different relationship. And it'd be an interesting relationship, what I'm seeing with the two charts here. Well, Stargazers, I really do hope that this was very informative, that this was very fun and enjoyable for you. I kind of felt like I was kind of blah, 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 so I'm very sorry. I promise I did actually rehearse this, but sometimes you just have those days where nothing seems to make sense to you, or it just seems like things are not coming out too well. But either way, I hope that you get some benefit out of this episode. Above all, do not be afraid to look up at the stars. We see our origins of astrology up there. Also, I believe that the moon is still waning up until, I'm thinking, the second week of May. So we're able to have some light being illuminated to the 12 constellations that make the 12 zodiacal signs. But it, you know, either way, it's also just a great time. I think I might know what's causing the blah, blah, blah. Mercury stopped its retrograde motion as of the 25th, which is a big, huge yay, even though we're in shadow. Come the first, it'll be fully over Mercury retrograde, but sometimes I feel like I have a rebound effect after Mercury retrograde. Like my energy tends to get really low. My thought process tends to get really sluggish. It doesn't seem to meet where I'm going, where I want it to go. So it's all just very interesting. But, you know, looking up at the stars is definitely a great way to kind of take a pause from the whole effects of Mercury retrograde and what was what back last week. But above all, Stargazers, I also see, well, some people are in behind the wheel when it comes to driving. They're starting to be a little safer. I just urge you, still be careful. There seems to be a lot of accidents and a lot of emergencies that have been happening. I've actually heard in total 8 sirens today. So just be really careful out there. Be really safe. I do hope that you are well. And between now and next week, Stargazers, I will talk with you then. If you have any questions or comments for Sandra Mizek, you can contact her at Mizek, M-I-S-E-K, sandra@gmail.com. You can also contact her on her Instagram page at sandra.mizek. Also, for as little as $2 a month, you can become a Patreon to Seventh House Astrology. With that, you get a free chart of the moment sent to you every month to your email inbox. I know that you guys love the Char of the Moment, so definitely subscribe, become a member to Patreon to get that full benefit. Again, it is patreon.com/7thHouseAstrology.